Hare Krishna. So we are continuing our discussion on the 64 qualities of Lord Krishna. And in the discussion so far, 48 qualities have been covered. So we begin today with the 49th quality. Of course, Krishna has innumerable qualities. Srila Rupa Goswami has simply extracted the most important ones and listed them out here. So today we will discuss the 8 qualities from quality number 49 to 56. The 49th quality is that Krishna is all honorable. Srila Rupa Goswami defines this as being that a person who is the chief amongst all important persons is called all honorable, whom everyone honors. Such a person is all honorable. And the test is that especially among important persons, he should be considered the most important. Not just among any society, if someone is considered important, that's not very relevant. But he must be honored amongst very, very important persons. When Indra saw that the residents of Vrindavan were planning to offer a sacrifice for his pleasure, he became very happy. But then, when Krishna spoke so sweetly to his father and convinced him to change his mind and to worship Govardhan instead, so Indra became outraged. And he was thinking that the residents of Vrindavan have become intoxicated by their opulence, and therefore they are performing an offense against the demigods, Deva Helanam, and they need to be taught a lesson. And even as he was ranting and raving about Krishna, he was insulting him in so many words. Then he spoke this one verse, Vachalam balisham stabdham agyam panditamaninam krishnam marte upashritya gopame chakrurapriyam. And these insulting words were meant for Krishna by Indra in a mood of intoxication with pride and opulence. And what he meant to say was that Krishna is vachalam. He is very talkative. He is an over-talkative person. He talks too much for his own good. Balisham, he is just a small kid, just a boy, just a child. Stabdham, he is arrogant, impudent. He is speaking in front of his adults like this and he dares to even offend the demigods. Agyam, he is ignorant and foolish. Panditamaninam. Pandit means a wise or a learned person. Maninam, mana means to imagine oneself to be or to think oneself to be. So Indra was criticizing Krishna that he thinks himself to be very smart, very wise. Agyam panditamaninam krishnam. This boy who is called Krishna, martyam, he is simply a resident of the martya loka, which means he is an ordinary human being. Upashtitya gopame chakrur apriyam. So the gopa, all the residents of Vrindavan, the cowherd men, because they have taken shelter, upashtitya, of Krishna, therefore they have acted very unfavorably towards me, chakrur apriyam. So these were not very nice words to use for Krishna. Sridhar Swami, the original commentator of the Srimad Bhagavatam, has explained that actually Mother Saraswati, who is also a great devotee of the Lord, she is the goddess of learning, she very kindly took these insulting words of Indra and explained and offered them to Krishna's lotus feet with a completely opposite meaning, which was actually praising Krishna. So she transformed the meaning of Indra's insulting words into a prayer of glorification at Krishna's lotus feet. And Sridhar Swami explains that Goddess Saraswati meant Balisham to mean not just a boy or a child, but someone who is free from pretension like a child, who is childlike, not childish. There's a great difference, who is very pure, very innocent like a child. By the word stabdham, Indra meant one who is very arrogant. But Goddess Saraswati, she offered the meaning for that as being that he has no one worthy of offering homage to. In other words, that he is the only candidate to whom homage or honor should be offered. There is no one greater than him to whom he should be obliged to offer honor or homage to. And then he explained agyam. Indra intended that word to mean ignorant or foolish. But Goddess Saraswati says agyam means him for whom nothing remains to be known. He knows everything because he is omniscient. By the words panditamaninam, Indra intended to say that Krishna thinks himself or imagines himself to be a wise person. So Indra's implication was that actually Krishna was not a wise person. He only imagines himself as such. But Goddess Saraswati turned around the meaning to say that all the panditas, all the learned wise people, the knowers of the absolute truth, they offer Krishna man or honor or respect. So pandita manina means that all the wise people in the universe offer Krishna glorification. They offer Krishna homage. And Krishna is not just an ordinary boy in Martyaloka. He is the supreme absolute truth. And by saying Martyam, Saraswati Devi is glorifying Krishna that although he is the absolute truth, he nevertheless descends amongst the human society and lives as if he were an ordinary man. So in this way, Goddess Saraswati, in the words of Sridhar Swami, has turned the wonderful, has turned into a wonderful prayer the insulting words of Indra. So Goddess Saraswati has glorified Krishna as being Pandita Maninam, as one who is glorified and honored by those who should know. The honor or dishonor offered by those who don't know is not of much value. But when honor is offered by those who know, that is of value. So Pandita Manina means that Krishna is actually offered honor by everyone who should know what they are talking about. Even in Dwarka, all the Krishna is offered no respect, even Ugrasen Maharaj, who was the king. Because everyone understood that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he would be offered a very special bejeweled golden throne in the assembly house when Krishna used to go there to attend to state matters. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami mentions that Krishna is worthy of honor from all the demigods even. And he cites the examples of one day, one very busy day in the life of a doorkeeper of Dwarka, of Krishna's palace. Every day was very busy for the doorkeeper, because so many visitors used to come to see Krishna. And on this day in particular, the doorkeeper was really working overtime. And so the doorkeeper was saying, "Oh my dear Brahma, my dear Shiva, please sit down on this bench and wait. You want to see Krishna, you'll have to wait. Please sit on this bench outside. Oh my dear Indra, please stop chanting your prayers so loudly. You're causing a disturbance. Keep quiet, just sit quietly here. Oh Varuna, you have come. Go away now, there is no time for you. And oh my dear demigods, all of you are simply wasting your time here because Krishna is too busy today, he doesn't have the time to see you." So all the demigods in the universe are coming to offer their homage and honor to Krishna. The demigods are of course amongst the most respectable personalities in the universe, the most important people, the administrators of the whole universe. But they are coming and standing in line to offer their respects to Krishna. So we can understand how important and worthy of honor Krishna is. In the Mahabharata, we hear of Yudhishthir Maharaj wanting to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. It so happened that one day Narad Muni came and was asked by Yudhishthir Maharaj and the Pandavas to describe the various assembly halls of the demigods. And when Narad Muni was doing so, he happened to describe also the assembly hall of Yamaraj, and he mentioned that Yudhishthir Maharaj's father, deceased father, Pandu, and Pandu's ancestors were all in the wonderful assembly hall of Yamaraj, along with all the great celestial sages and rishis. And after describing all the other assembly halls all over the universe, then Yudhishthir Maharaj asked him that how is it that only King Harishchandra among all the kings on earth is in the assembly hall of Indra? And then Narad Muni explained that because Harishchandra has performed the Rajasuya Yajna, and your father Pandu wants you also to perform this Rajasuya Yajna so that both he and you can get a place in Indra's assembly. So my dear Yudhishthir Maharaj, you must perform the Rajasuya Yajna. So Yudhishthir Maharaj immediately understood that this was a divine order. The celestials had wanted him to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. And he understood also that this was Krishna's will, that the kingdom should be full, the whole earth should be full of piety and virtue, and that all influence, demoniac influences, should be eradicated from this earth under the kingship of a righteous king like Maharaj Yudhishthir. So that was the second reason why Maharaj Yudhishthir wanted to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. But more than that, the all-important reason why Yudhishthir Maharaj agreed to this proposal was that he thought to himself, here is a wonderful opportunity to glorify Krishna. Because in the Rajasuya Yajna, as in any yajna or major festival, there is always a ceremony when certain important individuals who are worthy of respect are brought together and worshipped with many auspicious substances like Arghya, Somaras and so on. So Yudhishthir Maharaj was thinking, yes, this Rajasuya Yajna will be attended by all the demigods. Brahma, Shiva, Indra will all come. And in front of them, I will perform the Agra Puja to Krishna. Agra Puja means that amongst all the important persons present in the assembly, one who is the most important, the chief amongst all important persons, is chosen and first offered the puja. And then the other important persons are offered respect. So Yudhishthir Maharaj thought that this is the opportunity I have. So that in front of all the assembled demigods and the sages from all the universe, Krishna's name and fame and position will be established once and for all. And everyone will know that Krishna is actually all honorable. That is why he actually agreed to this proposal. Yudhishthir Maharaj did not have a trace of any lust in him. Lust for power, lust for kingdom, lust for wealth. He didn't have even a trace of that. He wanted to do this only to establish Krishna's supremacy, so that everyone would know what was Krishna's position and glory. So when the time came for the Rajasuya Yajna, and the proceedings went on very smoothly, all the sages and demigods all had come there, and the last day of the Yajna came, and it was time now for the Agra Puja. And Bhishma commanded Yudhishthir that now you have to perform the Agra Puja. So select amongst the assembled people here someone who is worthy of respect. So Yudhishthir Maharaj asked his counselors, but the counselors were confused. Someone said Vyasadev, someone said Brahma, someone said Shiva. And then Yudhishthir Maharaj asked Bhishma Dev. He says, you please tell us, O Kuru chief, who amongst the assembled people here is the chief amongst all the important persons? And without hesitation, Bhishma said Just as the sun is the chief amongst all luminaries in the sky, similarly, without doubt, Krishna is the most important person amongst all the important persons assembled here. And Yudhishthir, Sahadev agreed immediately. Then Bhishma commanded Sahadev that you announce this now in the assembly. So Sahadev stood up and very boldly announced that now Maharaj Yudhishthir will offer the Agra Puja to Krishna. Even though many demigods like Brahma and Shiva have come here, but they are all subordinate to Krishna. Krishna is the person who is the super soul in the hearts of all. He is the object of worship of all the yogis and ascetics who seek self-realization. In this way, Sahadev went on to speak for several minutes, and there was a thundering applause. Sadhu, sadhu, everyone appreciated Sahadev's wisdom and said, yes, we all agree with you that Krishna is all honorable. He is the one who is fully deserving of the Agra Puja. Of course, there was one person, one gentleman there who didn't like this idea, and that was Shishupal. And he was also joined by a few of his friends, some kings, and they offered some resistance because of envy. And Krishna dealt with Shishupal in course of time very nicely by beheading him, but he also granted salvation to Shishupal. So at the assembly of the Rajasuya Yajna also we see that Krishna was honored as being the most honorable amongst all honorable persons. The next one is that Krishna, the next quality, the 50th quality of Krishna as listed by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is that he is the supreme controller. Srila Rupa Goswami says that there are two kinds of supreme controller, or there should be two attributes to one who is a supreme controller. One is that he should be completely independent in the way he deals with everyone. He should not be obliged or forced to deal with people in a certain way. He can do whatever he likes to anyone he likes. And the second is that the supreme controller should be one whose orders can never be neglected by anyone, whoever that person may be. So in relation to the first attribute of being the supreme controller, that is, one who is completely independent, Srila Rupa Goswami gives the example of the contradictory treatment meted out by Krishna to Kaliya on one hand and Brahma on the other hand. Kaliya, of course, was the most sinful living entity in this universe, and Brahma was the most pious living entity in this universe. So it would appear on logical grounds that Kaliya should have been the object of Krishna's derision and his neglect, and that Brahma should have been the object of Krishna's favor and appreciation. But actually it was the opposite that happened. When Kaliya had become such a cause of havoc in Braja, and Krishna was obliged to actually do something about it, he jumped into the Yamuna and then danced on Kaliya's hooves and completely subdued him. And what is more, because of this, he marked every one of the heads, the 100 heads and the hooves. On top of the hood there is a head. So he marked all the heads of Kaliya with his lotus footprints. And this was something that was completely bewildering for everyone. Even the wives of Kaliya, the Naga Patnis, they were also thinking, and they could not understand what the reason was for this. And they said, Kasyanubhavo Syanadeva Vidmahe Tavangrirenu Sparashadhikaraha Yadvanchaya Shrir Lalana Charattapo Vihaya Kaman Suchiram Dhritavrata. The Naga Patnis were praying to Krishna, my dear Lord, we do not understand what our husband, this Kaliya snake, Kasya Anubhavaha, what has he done in the previous life that the results are such that he has obtained the qualification, the adhikar, of having the dust of your lotus feet upon his head. Tava angri renu sparsha adhikarah. Renu means the dust, angri means the feet. So what has he done? We are bewildered. What has he done in previous lives that has given him this qualification of having the dust of your lotus feet on his head? And this is a favor for which even the goddess of fortune is seeking. She is performing to this end for a long time. Suchiram dhridavrataha. She is performing austere penances, giving up all other desires. So such a difficult object to achieve, even for Lakshmi Devi, has been achieved by this sinful snake Kaliya. One generally gets a snake's body because of having committed great sins in the previous lives. Especially one who is envious of others gets the body of a snake. So how is it that this Kaliya was so much favored by you and he got your mercy in this way? So this is a bewildering idea. On the other hand, after the Brahma Vimohan Leela, when Brahma saw the mystic potency, inconceivable potency of Lord Krishna, he began to realize his mistake and offered wonderful prayers to Krishna. But Krishna's response was very frosty, very cool. Krishna didn't at all respond in a mood of appreciation, or he didn't even seem happy. He was just completely neglecting Brahmaji. And because Krishna was in the mood of a small cowherd boy, he was in his just entered his Pauganda age, that is, he was just around 6 years old at that time, between 5 and 6 years old. So he was just behaving like that, an ordinary cowherd boy who was more interested in rejoining his friends on the bank of the Yamuna than in hearing the philosophy of Brahma, the four-headed Brahma who has come from Brahma Loka. So in this way, Brahma received, who is actually the pious, most pious entity in the universe, received such a cool treatment from Krishna. Whereas Kaliya, the most sinful person, he received some real special mercy. Chaukidar. So here we see that Krishna's independent nature, he can deal with different people as he likes. He is not obliged. Because someone is pious, he has to deal in one way. Because someone is sinful, he has to deal in another way. He is completely independent. The second characteristic of the one who is a supreme controller is that his orders cannot be neglected by anyone. And in the to justify this point, Rupa Goswami talks about Uddhava's prayer in the first canto, in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Uddhava glorifies Krishna as being the Lord of the three modes of material nature, as being the Lord of everything in this creation. And he chants a very wonderful prayer in this connection.
Svayam tvasamya tishayastrayadhishah Svaraja lakshmyapta samasta kamah Balim haradvishchiralokapale Kirita kotidita padapithai.
Uddhava is glorifying Krishna as being Svayam tu asamya atishayah. That though there is no one who is equal to Krishna, or Atishaya, no one greater than Krishna. Krishna is Tri Adhishaha. Adhisha. Adhisha means the Lord. So he is the Lord of all the threes. Threes means think of all the sets of threes that you can think of in the universe. What are the various threes you can think of? One is Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. So Krishna is the Lord of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. The other threes we can think of are the three modes of material nature. So Krishna is the Lord of the three modes of material nature. then you can think of the three kinds of Shaktis of Krishna. The Chit Shakti or the spiritual energy, the Maya Shakti or the material energy, and the Tatastha Shakti or the Jiva Shakti, the Jivas. All three are under the control of Krishna. Then Krishna is also the Lord of the material world, which is Devi Dham. He is the Lord of Mahesh Dham. He is the Lord of Hari Dham or Vaikuntha. He is the Lord of Goloka Vrindavan also, which is included in the spiritual world. In this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita has analyzed this beautiful verse and given examples of the different ways in which Krishna is Tri Adhishaha. He is the Lord of all the threes. And because of this, Krishna is worthy of respect and honor by everyone. He has inconceivable potencies called Swarajya Lakshmi. And these Swarajya Lakshmis, they are fully capable, apta samasta kamaha, of fulfilling all his desires. So Krishna's innumerable spiritual potencies can fulfill every desire that Krishna has. Balim haradbhis chiraklokapalaihi. Chira means those who are very long living. Lokapala means the presiding deities of the different planets in the universe, the demigods. They are also offering balim. Bali means sacrifice, or it means the gifts and taxes as an honor that they come and offer at the lotus feet of Krishna. And when they come to Krishna, their helmets, kirita koti, their millions of helmets are clanging together on the floor as they offer their respects to Krishna. In other words, even Brahma, Shiva, Indra, etc., no one can deny the orders of the Supreme Lord. In this connection, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita narrates the story of Brahma visiting Dwarka. And he says, one time, Brahmaji wanted to see the glories of Krishna, and he visited Dwarka. And the doorkeeper came and gave the message to Krishna that Brahmaji is waiting for you. So Krishna sent back a message through the doorkeeper saying, ask him which Brahma is waiting. So when the doorkeeper asked, then Brahma was a little puzzled that what does he mean by saying which Brahma? Are there any more Brahmas in this universe apart from me? So he said, anyway, please inform Lord Krishna that the four-headed Brahma has come. So then the doorkeeper duly went and informed Krishna about this, and Krishna said, all right, send him in. So as soon as Brahma entered the room where Lord Krishna was seated and he offered respects to Krishna, all of a sudden he saw around him a most extraordinary sight. He saw millions and millions of other Brahmas and Indras and Shivas, all of whom had come there to offer their respects to Krishna. And they were all offering their respects to Krishna by offering obeisances, and their helmets made a huge clanging sound as they collided together when they touched their helmets to the floor. And then they all said to Krishna, my dear Lord, you have summoned us here. For what purpose? What service can we do for you? So Krishna answers to all of them, the my dear Brahma, my dear Indra, Shiva, as the case may be, he was replying, I have just called you here to know from you whether everything is going on all right in your respective universes. And they said, yes, by your mercy, my dear Lord, everything is going on very, very nicely. And then they all departed. By Krishna's inconceivable spiritual potency, only the four-headed Brahma could see what was actually going on. Each of the Brahmas, apart from the four-headed Brahma, each of the Indras, each of the Shivas who had come there from the different universes, could not see anyone else apart from themselves and Krishna. So this was something most extraordinary. Brahma was completely bewildered upon seeing this this display of mystic potency. And then Krishna asked our Brahma, the four-headed Brahma, so Brahma, is everything all right? And Brahma said, yes, my lord, by your mercy, everything is all right. So, all right, now go back and do everything nicely and manage the affairs of the universe very nicely. So in this way, we see that when Krishna summons, then all the demigods led by Brahma, Shiva, Indra have to respond. They have to come there. So this is the second meaning of the word supreme controller, that no one can disobey or neglect his orders. The third quality, or the 51st quality of Krishna mentioned by Rupa Goswami, is that he is changeless. In other words, that he never changes his constitutional position. He ever remains the Supreme Personality of Godhead in all situations, in all circumstances. Even when Krishna was enacting his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan, he was still the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Generally, when one is a child, one's physical prowess and intelligence is highly diminished compared to adulthood. But here we see that for Krishna there was no difference. His intelligence, his power, his potency, his qualities were all the same. Whether he is in Balya, in the age of Balya, or childhood, in Pauganda, in Kaishor, etc. In all stages, Krishna remains in his constitutional position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas the living entity has a tendency of getting his constitutional position covered over by the illusory energy of the Lord. Even when Krishna descends into this material world and interacts with the different forces and energies here, he is still untouched. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, there is a verse which says, Etad ishanam ishasya prakriti sthopitad gunaihi na yujyate sadatmasthair yatha buddhis tadashrayah. The meaning of this verse is that etad ishanam ishasya. Etad means this. Ishanam is divinity. Ishasya means of Isha or of the Lord. So this is the divinity of the Lord. What is the divinity of the Lord? Prakritisthah api. That even though he is situated within the material nature, apparently, tad gunaihi na yujyate. He is not affected by the three modes of material nature. This is his divinity. That his divinity or constitutional position is never in any way compromised because he is in touch with the three modes of material nature. Sadatmasthair yatha buddhistadashrayah. Sadatmasthair, those individuals who are situated on the platform of the soul, tadashrayah, and who have taken shelter of the Supreme Lord, are also in the same position, that they are also not influenced by the three modes of material nature. So Rupa Goswami says that if devotees of the Lord, by taking shelter of the Lord, become free from the influence of the three modes of nature, then what to speak of Krishna himself? So therefore Krishna, he is completely changeless in his position as a Supreme Personality of Godhead. The 52nd quality of Krishna is that he is all cognizant. All cognizant means that he knows everything. Srila Rupa Goswami defines the word all cognizant to mean that he is a person who knows the feelings of everyone and he knows incidents that take place at all times in all places. Omniscient. There is nothing that he doesn't know. And to illustrate this point, Rupa Goswami gives the story about Durvasa Muni visiting the Pandavas when they were living in exile in the forest. Duryodhana was not satisfied after the Pandavas were exiled, and he was still planning his evil schemes to somehow finish the Pandavas off. One time when the great sage Durvasa Muni came to Duryodhana's court, Duryodhana very cleverly treated him very, very nicely, because he knew that Durvasa Muni would get pleased very easily and also he would get angered very easily. So he served him so nicely that Durvasa Muni was very pleased, and he asked him, "What benediction do you want from me?" So devious as he was, Duryodhan said, "My dear sage, I am seeking the welfare of my cousins, the Pandavas, who are living in the forest. So please go and bless them. But please go at a time when the Pandavas, and especially Draupadi, have finished taking their noontime meals." So Durvasa Muni, who always traveled with his 10,000 disciples, proceeded to the forest where the Pandavas were staying. When Yudhishthir saw Durvasa Muni arrived at his doorstep with 10,000 disciples, eager and hungry for lunch, he became a very, very worried man. Because Draupadi had already eaten. She had received a gift from the sun god. This was known as the famous Akshay Patra. Patra means vessel. Akshay means that which never gets exhausted. And the benefit of this vessel was that Draupadi could cook as much as she wanted in this vessel, and she could feed as many people as she wanted from this one vessel. But after she ate, then she would not be able to produce even a morsel from this vessel for that day. So Yudhishthir Maharaj was very quick thinking. So he immediately requested Durvasa Muni that you have come a long distance. So please go to the river and perform your afternoon sandhya, your prayers, take your bath and come back, and we will have a wonderful feast arranged for you. At that moment, Yudhishthir Maharaj had no idea how he would arrange this feast. But anyway, to pacify Durvasa Muni, he said that. Meanwhile, they all gathered together, and the Pandavas were wondering what to do. And Draupadi was fervently praying for Krishna to come. And at that time, Krishna, although he was far away in Dwarka at that time, and nowhere near the forest where the Pandavas were staying, because he is all cognizant, because he could understand the incidents taking place far, far away in space, immediately he arrived there. And he asked Draupadi, "So, are you not going to feed me?" And Draupadi said that, "Well, there is nothing left. I have also eaten. And now with the Akshay Patra over, I cannot give you anything for the day. And now we are really embarrassed because Durvasa Muni has come here now with 10,000 disciples." So Krishna said, "Oh, just check in your Akshay Patra and see whether there is anything left." She said, "There is nothing left." He said, "Check anyway." So she checked and she found just one grain of vegetable, one small morsel of vegetable was still there. So then she gave it to Krishna. Krishna partook of that one morsel. And then he said, "Ah, now I'm completely satisfied." The Vedas say, "Yasmin tushte jagat tushtam." That when he is satisfied, the whole world is satisfied. So Durvasa Muni and his 10,000 disciples who were chanting their Gayatri Mantra, half immersed in the waters of the river, they suddenly felt themselves so full that they had, as if they had eaten 10 huge feasts. And they became very embarrassed, thinking that now our stomach is so full, we cannot even eat a morsel. And if we go back now, Yudhishthir Maharaj, who is always true to his word, must have arranged a huge feast for us. And it would be so embarrassing if we go there and say that we are not hungry. As Yudhishthir Maharaj understood what Krishna had done, he sent out Bhima, "Please go and invite the Muni back. It seems that he's late for his lunch." And Bhima was gung-ho in his enthusiasm, and he went out, "My dear Durvasa Muni, please come, please come." And when Durvasa Muni and his disciples saw the huge Bhima walking towards them with great determination to invite them, they really fled from that place like anything. And in this way, Krishna, by his all-cognizant and merciful quality, he saved the day for the Pandavas. He saved them from the wrath of Durvasa Muni. And thus he foiled Duryodhana's evil schemes. So this is the story Rupa Goswami gives to illustrate Krishna's quality of all cognizance. The 53rd quality is that Krishna is ever fresh, which means that everything about Krishna is also ever fresh. Krishna's name, Krishna's fame, Krishna's qualities, everything about Krishna is ever fresh. Therefore, devotees never tire about hearing, tire of hearing about Krishna.
Vayam tuna vitrupyama uttama shloka vikrame yachtinvatam rasagyanam svadu svadu pade pade.
The assembled sages at Naimisharanya tell Suta Goswami that please go on reciting the wonderful pastimes of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, because these are so nectarian and wonderful that we never tire of hearing these descriptions. Because Krishna is ever fresh, his narrations are called Nitya Navanavayamana, which appear new at every step. King Yamunacharya, the great Sri Vaishnava Acharya, has also said, Yadavadhi mamachetah Krishna padaravinde navanavaras dhaman udyate rantumasit. He says, ever since my chitta, my consciousness, became absorbed in the lotus feet of Krishna, every day I am experiencing a newer and newer taste. Navanavaras dhaman udyate rantumasit. Navanavaras, there is always something new, a new taste every moment in serving Krishna's lotus feet. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that even knowledge about Krishna remains ever fresh. The Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Krishna to Arjuna 5,000 years ago. But still today, as we read the Bhagavad Gita, we can relish it. And we can go on reading the various verses of the Bhagavad Gita and never feel tired. In fact, Rupa Goswami explains that even the Lakshmi Devis, who are generally very fickle-minded, who don't stay at one place for long, they also never leave the lotus feet of Krishna. So in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a description of how the queens of Lord Krishna reacted when Krishna returned to Dwarka after many months of stay in Hastinapur. And Shukadev Goswami explains,
Yadyapyasau parshvagato raho gatas tathapi tasyangri yugam navam navam pade pade ka virameta tat padach chalapi yachri na jahati karhichet.
Shukadev Goswami says, Yadyapi, although asau, he, that is Lord Krishna, was sometimes parshvagatah, he was sitting closely with the queens, or sometimes rahogatah, he was all alone, tathapi, even then, the goddesses of fortune, the queens of Dwarka, they always discovered a newer and newer taste in the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Tasyangri yugam, tasya means of him. Angri yugam means his two lotus feet. Navam navam pade pade. At every step they found new and newer taste in serving Lord Krishna. Ka viramet tat paja chalapi yat shri na jahati karhichid. So they could never leave the lotus feet of Krishna even for a moment. Another name for Lakshmi Devi is Chanchala. Chanchala means one who is restless, who can never stay fixed at one place. And therefore we see in this world that no one can hold on to wealth indefinitely. We can only hold on to wealth for some time. We obtain it for some time and then we lose it. But Krishna is Chanchalapati. He is a lord of Chanchala. Therefore, not just one Lakshmi, but the innumerable goddesses of fortune who are serving Krishna in Dwarka and also in the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan, they all remain fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna. It is also said here, Ka virameta tat padach, that which woman can leave the lotus feet of Lord Krishna? And to conclude, Rupa Goswami mentions that in the Lalit Madhav, Srimati Radharani says that Krishna is like an expert sculptor who chisels away at the stone-like chastity of even chaste married women and makes them unchaste to their husbands, and they become followers of Krishna. in this way, Rupa Goswami has explained the quality of Krishna being ever fresh. The 54th quality is Satchidananda, that Krishna is Sat, that means He is eternal, and this means that His body is never destroyed in space or time. It also means that Krishna's body is all-pervasive. It is everywhere. Chit means full of knowledge. It means that there is nothing left for Krishna to know. Krishna knows everything. And Ananda means that Krishna is a reservoir of all spiritual bliss. Rupa Goswami explains that the Brahmavadis, they are hankering for Brahmananda, the so-called joy or happiness of merging into the impersonal Brahman. But Rupa Goswami says the so-called Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma, this so-called joy of merging into the impersonal Brahman, is not actually joy. It is simply the first principle of joyfulness, but it is not really joy. It is simply a state of freedom from anxieties. It is a state of zero, a removal of the negative, the inebrieties of material existence. But to go to the positive, the plus of real joy and bliss, one has to take shelter of Krishna. Therefore, in the Hari Bhakti Sudhodaya, there is a saying, Tvat Sakshat Karanalabdha Vishuddhabdi Sthitasya Me Sukhani Goshpadayante Brahmanyapi Jagadguru. So in this verse, quoted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, one devotee is praying to the Lord. There he says, My dear Lord, ever since I have seen you, Tvat Sakshat Karana Ahlada, I am experiencing this Ahlada, this spiritual bliss, which is like a spiritually purified, ever-expanding ocean. Vishuddha Abdhi Sthitasya Me. I feel myself situated in an ever-expanding ocean of spiritual bliss, in front of which the happiness of Brahmananda is Goshpadayante, is like the water contained in the hoof print of a calf. So Krishna is Satchidananda Vigraha. He can award ultimate spiritual bliss to His devotees. Therefore His devotees never take interest in the impersonal Brahman. The 55th quality of Krishna is that He possesses all mystic perfections, which are generally called siddhis, the ashta siddhis, the eight yogic perfections like anima, lagima, mahima, prapti, ishitva, by which one can become smaller than the smallest, heavier than the heaviest, one can enter into anything, one can know everything. So Krishna is the master of all mystics. He is a Yogeshwar. He is Yogeshwar. So He is the possessor of all kinds of perfections, material and spiritual. And finally, point number 56, the 56th quality that Rupa Goswami mentions about Krishna is that He has inconceivable potencies. Without understanding this principle, Srila Jiva Goswami says in the Shatasandarbhas that one cannot understand Godhead. To understand Godhead, one must first of all understand that He has inconceivable potencies. And these inconceivable potencies are innumerable. But Srila Rupa Goswami gives three examples of how Krishna's potencies are inconceivable. The first example He gives to illustrate this point is that Krishna is present everywhere at the same time. This is truly inconceivable. If we are here in the temple, we can't be in the Prasadam hall at the same time. We can't be in two places at one time. But Krishna can be not just at two places, He can be at all places at the same time. When Kunti Maharani was offering prayers to Krishna as He was about to leave Hastinapur to go to Dwaraka, He also simultaneously entered into the womb of Uttara to save her embryo from the Brahmastra released by Ashwatthama. And Kunti Maharani began to pray to Krishna that yes, I understand you are the supreme absolute truth, that you are not only within the heart of every living entity, but you are also outside of everyone. And still, you are invisible.
Alaksham sarvabhutanam antarbahir avasthitam. Namasye purusham tvadyam.
She says, I pray to you as the foremost of all personalities.
Purusham prakritahi param.
And you are the ultimate supreme personality, the Lord of the Prakriti.
Alaksham sarvabhutanam antarbahir avasthitam
means that you are inside and outside of every living being, and at the same time you are invisible to everyone. So this is truly inconceivable, your potencies.
The second example Krishna, Rupa Goswami gives for illustrating that Krishna has inconceivable potencies is that he can illusion even Brahma and Shiva. When Indra opposed Krishna, when Krishna wanted to take the Parijat tree for the pleasure of Satyabhama, there was a war. And then Krishna easily defeated Indra. Afterwards, Narad Muni came there and he jokingly taunted, criticized Indra and said, my dear Indra, you may think that you are the king of the demigods, but you are nothing in front of Brahma and Shiva. And Krishna has easily defeated even Brahma and Shiva. So what to speak of you? So Indra also laughed very heartily, because by now he had understood the mistake he had made. In other words, Rupa Goswami says that Krishna can bewilder even the most exalted personalities in the universe like Brahma and Shiva. We know the example of the Brahma Vimohan Leela, whereby expanding himself into so many cows and cowherd boys, he really bewildered Brahma. When he assumed the Mohini avatar, he also bewildered Shiva. There are numerous instances like this which demonstrate Krishna's inconceivable potency. The third interesting example Rupa Goswami gives to show that Krishna has inconceivable potency is that he says that he removes the reactions of the sinful activities performed by his devotees. In the Brahma Samhita, Brahma himself says that anyone, right from Indra Gopa, the insect Indra Gopa, right up to Indra, everyone is bound by the reactions of their activities. But karmani nirdahati kintucha bhakti bhajam. But for one who is performing devotional service to Lord Krishna, the reactions of his sinful activities can be eradicated from the root. And this is very wonderful, because devotees don't have to worry about the law of karma if they are surrendered to Krishna. Then Krishna takes care of all their karma. And to illustrate this point, Rupa Goswami gives a story of Krishna bringing back from Yamaraj the dead child of his guru, Sandipani Muni. When Krishna and Balaram went to Sandipani Muni and his wife, asking what dakshina they could give, Sandipani Muni said, I must first consult with my wife, because you two are not ordinary boys. So what kind of dakshina should I ask from you? That dakshina should be something really extraordinary. So having consulted with his wife, he came back and said that, as you know, my small child died some time back. And because you have inconceivable potencies, I would ask that you bring back our dead child. Something which normally would be impossible for anyone to do. So Krishna and Balaram immediately went to the abode of Yamaraj. He blew his conch shell loudly to announce his arrival. And then he said, my dear Yamaraj, please be blessed to follow my order. Immediately deliver to me the son of my guru, Sandipani Muni. Yamaraj happily delivered the boy to Krishna, and then Krishna came back and delivered the boy to his guru, Sandipani Muni. So Srila Rupa Goswami says that even if someone in ordinary course of his karma was destined to go to the abode of Yamaraj and be punished for various activities, or if he was destined to die at an early age, nevertheless, Krishna can reverse a change at his will all these things.
He is powerful enough to destroy the sinful reactions of all His surrendered devotees. So this is the 56th quality, the inconceivable potency of Krishna. So we will stop here. Tomorrow we are going to hear the remaining 8 qualities of Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? One or two brief. Sorry, we had to really rush through like a fast railroad train because we will speak about the 8 qualities. There's so much to say about each. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.